So yeah, I know you spent a little bit of time in Cheyenne. Did you ever witness a brawl at an East Central high school basketball game?
No, I don't think so. I was there during the James Johnson era, so okay. I think East was getting the better of those games, generally speaking.
Yeah, definitely. So, Kent, we wanted to talk with you little college hoops and all that, but you know, first of all, for those that aren't familiar, and I know it's a very intricate rankings that you have, the KenPom rankings that are utilized throughout college basketball. But maybe if you could, a breakdown for maybe our listeners who aren't totally familiar with your style of rankings that you're using.
Yeah, sure. So my rankings are kind of I'd say more of a tool to like identify a team's offensive and defensive ability. So I'm looking at offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency, which is basically just the points a team scores per possession or the points they allow per possession, and then adjusting that for schedule strength and some other kind of lesser factors, and then you know the ratings kind of fall out of that. So teams that have a bigger difference between their offense and their defense are going to be better teams, and ultimately that's what kind of falls out of it. So it's a little different than like the RPI, where you know the RPI is just looking at wins and losses, and the RPI doesn't really handle location of game very well. It kind of ignores it in schedule strength actually. So my ratings go beyond that and look at how a team played in each game. So even if you're beating a bad team, if you didn't play well against that team, you're going to be hurt in my system. Whereas in the RPI, it doesn't really know the difference between a 30-point win over a team or a case where you went on a last-second shot on maybe a fortunate call by the officials or something like that.
When you started these rankings, did you ever think that they would be utilized the way they are by NCAA selection committees, a lot of the big networks? Did you think it would get to this point?
No, I sure didn't. I mean, I definitely didn't have any thoughts about that really. It's not something you wouldn't just start doing
right.
Something and think, yeah, this is going to be really popular. I mean, honestly, when growing up, I was like a big fan of Jeff Sagarin's work, and he was kind of the name in ratings. And so I wanted to kind of do what he was doing. And, I mean, the first attempts at that, I just remember, like a summer at UW when I was in grad school, kind of tinkering around in the computer lab, trying to think of some interesting things to do, and finally started banging out some ratings, and obviously I had no idea where it would go, but it's been a pretty cool ride.
Ken Pomeroy joining us here on the Sports Zone. So, who are some teams right now that are ranked high in your rankings, but maybe down low in the RPI, or vice versa in the RPI that are ranked very high, but not exactly lighting the world on fire in your rankings?
Yeah. So I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage here because I actually don't monitor the RPI
okay.
all that often.
Okay.
It's kind of an outdated ranking system that I do ignore it a little bit. I mean, the teams that catch my eye, when I look at my system, like Clemson is ranked 13th. I don't think people have a ton of respect for Clemson. I mean, historically, they obviously don't have a lot. They don't have a storied basketball history. Coming off a loss to North Carolina where they actually own the longest losing streak in the country in any one location, losing 59 straight at North Carolina. So it's not like this is a team that, you would necessarily give the benefit of the doubt to. But they're ranked 13th in my system. Tennessee's ranked 14th. And I do think, the SEC is particularly interesting where, I think people are generally familiar with Kentucky and Florida. They're usually at the top of the conference. But, there's teams like Tennessee and Auburn this year that are, both pretty solid teams that are probably just as good as Kentucky and Florida. And either one could win that conference. So Clemson and Tennessee, I think, are two teams that are going to be interesting to watch the rest of the year because the ratings certainly suggest that they are strong enough to, not just get to the NCAA tournament, but, win a couple games when they get there.
I hate to even ask this question, but what's your strongest team in the Mountain West Conference, and where are the Wyoming Cowboys?
Yeah, so I have Nevada 19th. So, I mean, that's legit. You got one. I think the conference as a whole is actually a little bit stronger than it has been, and certainly Nevada is an at-large type team. Should they not win the conference tournament, they'll get a bid, which is just progress for the conference. They have the Pokes down at 122, which is obviously a little scary. I had them preseason 89th, and I think there was obviously some reasons for optimism that they could be in the top three or four of the conference. It's it's been a weird year because obviously they disappointed to some extent, but also the conference itself, I think, has been a little bit stronger at the top than we might have expected. I mean, you got Boise State and San Diego State that have also been pretty strong. I think there was reason to wonder whether those teams would be strong. Like, certainly the Aztecs with their new coach kind of wondered if, losing Steve Fisher would have a detrimental impact on that team. And obviously, like, maybe 2 or 3 years from now when the recruiting kicks in under Brian Dutcher, maybe it'll be a different story. But so far, San Diego State has, looked respectable. So, it's not like I'm going to paint a rosy picture here and tell you the conference is, knocking on the door of, the Pac-12 or the Big East or conferences like that. But I think there's reasons for optimism in the league.
Ken, I'm curious. I've seen you talk about this on Twitter a little bit. With the possibility of changing how transfers work, getting in, not having to sit out a year, how do you think that could affect mid-major players who, start to get a little name for themselves, wanting to maybe leave for greener pastures? Do you think this could be a good thing or a negative thing for college basketball if they do pass such a rule where you don't have to sit out a year to transfer?
Yeah, it's certainly a complicated issue. I mean, there's multiple ways to look at this. The point I made on Twitter yesterday was more from the player perspective where, I mean, generally speaking, I'm going to sympathize more with the player who, may get under-recruited coming out of high school. It turns out they're really good and, for their own professional development and just for their own, enjoyment of the game. They only have 4 years to play. I can certainly respect someone who says, hey, wow, I'm way too good for this lower-level conference, so let me transfer up to a higher level conference and test myself. So I tend to side with that. I don't know how it would affect college basketball as a whole per se. I mean, I think I'll concede, more player movement probably wouldn't be good for the general audience, but we are in an era, I guess, of kind of like elevated transfer rates. And I don't know that the popularity of the game has really suffered. And there's even cases, look, where mid majors can carve out a niche, I hesitate to call Mountain West team mid-majors. They're better than your standard mid-major. They're not as good as power conference teams. But you look at Nevada and what Eric Musselman's doing there, and he's obviously built that program on getting transfers from power conference schools. They got Kendall Stevens from Purdue. They got the Martin twins from NC State. So, they're able to kind of carve out a niche doing that. I was just looking today at Louisiana Lafayette, which is a program that probably nobody really pays too much attention to outside of Lafayette, Louisiana. But they're having an outstanding year. I mean, they're the type of team that could really pull off an upset in the NCAA tournament, and their starting lineup is filled with transfers. Four of the five guys in the starting lineup are basically transfers from power conference schools. So I think a net effect would hurt lower-level schools, but there's certainly going to be kids that transfer down, that can't make it at the power conference schools, that don't get enough playing time and want more playing time, and they'll transfer down. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be the death knell for mid-major schools that some people might believe.
Do you think mid-majors get a raw deal when it comes down to, being some of the best teams in the country? Hey, listen, I understand the Power 5 teams. They get, they play the tougher schedules. You can go 6-7 deep in a lot of those conferences, and they're really, really good. But there's some really awfully good mid-major teams that don't get the chance to play the type of schedule they need to or have to go out on the road. So I'm curious your opinion there. Do you feel like they get a raw deal a lot of times?
Yeah, Keith, that's one of the reasons why I, really got into this business of rating teams, is to try to kind of objectively assess that question. So certainly, I mean, if there's one thing I could do, change about college basketball, it would be to have more equity in scheduling, to kind of impose situations where, power conference schools have to schedule home and homes with the better mid-major schools, just so we could get a better handle on this question. Because we've seen teams, in recent seasons. Wichita State is really the poster child for that. Obviously, they've, moved up to the American now, so they're playing better competition. But, they were a team that would constantly, beat the living daylights out of Missouri Valley schools. They would get underseeded in the NCAA tournament, and then they would have success and prove that, they were pretty good, and that they had the opportunity to play good teams in January and February, we would have realized that. It's a case-by-case type thing. I look at my ratings and I see teams that, I mentioned Louisiana Lafayette, nobody's talking about them. Northern Kentucky, I have ranked 61st, and, nobody's talking about them, and they're not going to get in that large bid. They're not even going to be considered for it. But there certainly are teams like that that just, don't have the opportunity to really prove themselves this time of year. And, if you're a mediocre power conference school, I actually am not one to dump on the mediocre power conference schools, but the big advantage they have is that, if they get hot for 2 or 3 weeks in February, they're going to rack up quality wins and get a bid, whereas obviously the schools and lower conferences don't have that opportunity.
Ken, you mentioned Louisiana Lafayette a couple times, and I had a chance to see him. I got to go call the Wyoming Cowboys games in the Cayman Islands and saw Louisiana Lafayette. And you're exactly right. They are a really, really good team. And ironically, it's a game the Cowboys won, to be honest with you. It's probably a nice win for Wyoming. But you're exactly right. That's a good team that's largely going to go unnoticed this season.
Yeah, no question. And, like you said, I mean, it's just a really solid team. And they're never on TV or anything. So
it's not like
anybody's watching them except for people like you who are covering the team playing them.
All right, so you went to UW, you got your grad degree in atmospheric science at Wyoming. What was your best memory of going to school at the University of Wyoming?
Well, I mean, I think I got a degree in atmospheric science. I ended up being a meteorologist, and I think that was, like, the best part
right.
of being in Laramie was, you know, the weather. I think for most people, the weather, you know, the general public, the weather is just really annoying and a nuisance and bothersome, but from a meteorology standpoint, it was really exciting, and you could appreciate it and kind of marvel at it. So I enjoyed that, and I certainly enjoyed the mild summers as well, and just kind of goofing off in Laramie and playing a lot of golf there. And it was definitely a more innocent time in my life, for sure.
No late nights at the Buck or anything like that for you?
I was a little scared of the Buck, yeah. That was definitely a scary place.
Awesome stuff. Hey, Ken, thank you so much for joining us. Again, Ken Pomeroy, KenPom.com, also covers college basketball on The Athletic. We look forward to chatting with you again if you have some time, and thank you so much for joining us.
All right, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.